time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. Fantastic to be here, as per usual.
I
need a new line.
If I wasn't quite... if I wasn't quite sure that Finn was your son, I am now. You've spent the last week and a half in Apollo Bay, timed it beautifully to coincide with the heaviest rainfall the region's ever experienced.
Just a small monsoon.
But the reason I bring up your son, Finn, is because he nearly decapitated himself. Was he falling off a table or...?
No, we were in the... We just got to Apollo Bay and I said to Kari, we'll go down and get some... go down to the pub for a meal for dinner. So we were just about to leave and he's quite on his feet, let's put it that way. And doesn't do anything slow. And as he went to... There's three steps out of the Big Four caravan park we'll stay in. If you haven't stayed at the Apollo Bay Big Four, and this is not a sponsor or anything, it's a cracking caravan park.
It is, we love it.
For kids, it's fantastic. And all Big Fours are, to be honest with you. But it's a fantastic caravan park. And as he's gone to step down, it's really good because there's a gate to stop kids from getting out. But I opened the gate, and I don't think he saw me open the gate. And he went to reach back to grab the gate that wasn't there. And I had a can of Jambo in my hand, as a father does.
That's a great...
I had his...
Did you not spill a drop as you were trying to grab him?
Like, so how I had... I'll get to that. I had... You know when you and I went to Cairns a few years ago, we bought those big GT poppers? I think they're about $120. I reckon I paid for them. Well, that's now a kid's toy.
Have we used them at all?
Never used them. Finn's literally plays with this toy, this fish he's got, and he calls it, ish, ish, and he runs around. And I took that out of his hands for when he walked down, and I had my car keys... to open the car to put him in, as well as a couple other things. So I was quite... And my phone. I was actually on FaceTime to Robbie. This is the worst part about it. And the poor kid...
Sorry,
is literally...
can I pull you up?
Go on.
You're on FaceTime to a mate.
Yep.
You've got a can of Jammo in your hand and your son... your son's about to crash land.
So Kari was pretty annoyed at me, you know, and he went from the top story, and as I went to grab him, I dropped everything. But somehow didn't drop the Jammo can. I dropped my phone, everything. Robbie will be a witness to that. And anyway, he landed on his head and he's scalped himself on his forehead. Yeah. And I reckon he's got no brains because he literally cried for 30 seconds and just goes, ish, and all he wanted was his little fish, well, the popper that we had.
Well, that to me confirms that he is a Hapgood because he's
got no chance.
Quite injury prone. I like the fact that you've brought up the $120 popper that we bought because it's something that we wanted to talk about this morning. Things that you have purchased throughout your fishing journey, and we are all we all have a role to play with this. We're all guilty of purchasing things that we see on the internet, that we see on Facebook, that we go, oh, that'll be brilliant. I cannot wait to get that because I'm going to use it all the time. And then we never do.
One thing that I am very good at is not buying fishing gear. I'll tell you what, I have the least amount of fishing gear out of everyone I know, all my mates, and I fish the most.
That's good. That's because all you use is a...
wine hook.
A wine hook.
And a couple of squid jigs.
Oh, crap.
You
beat me to it.
I don't have a lot of gear. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of other stuff that I don't need. Like I went out and bought that wood fire pizza the other day. But I've been using that.
How many times have you used your wood fire pizza that you bought?
Oh, I reckon 10 times. And I've had it for probably 10 weeks. Or I'd be using it once a week at least.
Well, I actually think that's pretty good
investment.
Yeah,
it's a
because when Universal remotes first came out, I bought one with a screen.
Yep,
I couldn't work out the user guide on how to get it working, and probably because I didn't read the user guide because who needs a manual? Let's be honest, that was $600. It was a waste. I think I can
I remember Dad buying those when I was younger.
I tend to be guilty of sometimes all the gear and no idea. Probably a good example of that is the wonderful, wonderful game fishing reels that I have. That
I thought this was going to come.
That
back
I have like I have four or five of them. I don't even have six of them. They all look like they have been dragged through the ocean depths.
Only looks two, like two of them are in trouble. and saved us.
I have never used them.
Used them once with me out of Apollo Bay. We didn't catch anything.
Actually, we've used them twice. We've gone once out of Apollo Bay and we've gone once out of Portland. And I have not seen them again.
And you won't, because I actually, the two of them, the two Tiagras, the 30 and a 50 that were yours, that are now mine, they are, I can't give them back to you the way they look, so I have to buy you two new ones. So I'll get you, the other ones, I haven't used the other ones too much.
Telica?
No, I wish you wish it was a Telica. You had a Finnor.
No, there's a Telica as well there, somewhere.
A Telica, you reckon? No, you got a Finnor and you've got a Penn International.
No, you had that big overhead. There's a big Telica. I can't find it. I'm assuming it's at your house.
Have a Telica. I wish I had your Telica, because you won't be getting that back. But anyway, it's they're good reels. They've caught more fish with me than you anyway. What are they going to do, collect dust in the shed? You might as well use them.
That wouldn't be too hard. Hey, now, we do like our fishing news and boating and outdoors, but one of the big news items at the moment is Rivian, which is a startup electric car company. And what they have is a pickup in the States at the moment, and they lost $1 billion last year as a company.
Not much money.
But all the reviews coming out of the States at the moment are that this new pickup is a game changer. So pickup in Australian terms is a ute.
I really like the fact that about this ute that you tagged me in it as we started this segment, so I got no idea about the ute. So you've got to leave this one up to you, but it looks good.
Not only does it look good, there's four electric motors in it. And so you know how a lot of cars, there is like 20 different settings. You've got hill descent, et cetera.
Yep.
That doesn't exist on the Rivian. You just drive it. And it's so intuitive.
Do you have to charge a battery every 20 minutes?
No. Well, they say it's about 500 miles. But why I'm bringing it up is because MotoTrend, which is a really big sort of car coverer in terms of a car media group that reviews vehicles in the States, mm-hmm. have praised it. And it's going to be a really interesting watch this space as to whether we will see it in Australia. Clearly, we're not going to see Elon Musk's Tesla for a while. We keep hearing that Ford aren't going to bring out their 150s. Well, we certainly haven't seen them in the petrol and diesel versions. Mm. That we're not going to see the Ford Lightning, which is effectively their 150 version of the electric pickup, which is such a shame. Because the Australian market now, and you always talk about Rams.
Mm, God, I love them. Absolutely.
Doing my head in. I reckon we're begging for the next top line electric pickup that we're going to see in the States that we will be jealous of here. Now, it's not as big a market as the States, clearly, but there's clearly a market for utes. We're going to see, I think we'll see in the next month, Ford will take over Hilux for the first time in almost 25 years as the number one selling ute in the Ranger. So there's a huge interest in it. I would love to see the top end electrified and the top end, you know, F-150s, the Raptors here in Australia without having to have the conversion kits that cost you $150,000 to get them over here.
It's just going to be interesting to see if they can do what petrol and diesel do. That's what I'm more. I know you're saying the reviews are good, everything like that, but it's just,
you know who you sound?
It's just ScoMo.
You
ScoMo, he's not going to let this into the country anyway.
It's not going to tow your boat. It's not going to tow your caravan.
Well, mate, they tow more. You know what this tows? Yes, I know, but for 20 minutes.
No.
Hold on, boys. Sorry, mate. We're just going to have another beer stop here because we've got to charge the battery.
For 24 hours.
I'm not arguing. Yeah. But that actually is starting a really nearly selling point for me. But it's a...
No, say 500... mile range, huge range.
But that's not towing.
800. Well, no, that's a good point.
That's what I'm saying.
So you'll need a greater battery.
So you go from four batteries to 28 in the car.
Well, that's clearly going to be a sticking point. But if they can get that part right.
Can you plug your car into its own 12-volt charge and charge it while you're driving?
That could be a game changer.
All right. I want to mention one more thing that's coming into Australia, or has just arrived in Australia, I should say.
Oh, yes.
Is the new 600 horsepower Mercury. It's here. It's arrived. I don't know where, but it has arrived.
It is massive as well.
And I know that Andrew from Melbourne Marine Center, the boys there, you and I are going to attend this. It was it's going to happen in the future regarding the COVID rules and whatnot.
Because so 2025.
It could be the 16th model of the 600 horsepower, the way it's going. But Andrew from Melbourne Marine Centre is actually going to try and get the engine to his marine shop, and you and I are going to do a night out there, which will be good fun. And
well, it's supposed to be for Melbourne Marine's launch.
It was meant to be.
Which is open now, but clearly the state is still in lockdown.
They're going to be in their they're going to be in their fourth year for their launch.
Geez, I've copped a bit of feedback as well, Aaron, during the week.
On your boat?
No, I went to the prom. One of the great locations I've decided globally. And unbelievable. You know, only a few hours from Melbourne. It's incredible. But I've copped a bit of feedback for posting a family photo and going down the prom, enjoying, you know, the serenity.
You're allowed to.
You can't be doing that.
Oh, jeez.
And now I understand it's a difficult time for those based in Melbourne. But you chose to live there.
But if they could do it and we couldn't, I guarantee you they would be doing it too.
Yeah, you're having a go at people in Perth that whose life has not changed. They enjoyed the 3-day lockdown. It's like, oh, I don't have to go to work. It's a break. This is terrific. And then back to normality rather. But the prom, my goodness.
It's so funny you say that because I did a couple of posts about it when I was in Apollo Bay and I copped the exact same messages saying, why are you there? You don't live there, this and that. I'm like, I live in regional Victoria. I'm allowed here. But they were convinced that I wasn't.
Yeah, I got copped for going to Mallacoota. And if we rewind 200 years ago, Mallacoota was devastated by huge fires and they just haven't, because of COVID, they have not had the tourism. Half the shops are up for sale. Mallacoota, incredible. We actually have to get beyond the policing of other people and start to go out to these rural places, show our support, spend our money, because that's the only way that these shops will remain open. Otherwise, the next time you go there, there'll be no shops open. There'll be no coffee shops for you to enjoy. The local tackle store won't exist because they cannot afford to run. So we have to start going to these rural locations and supporting them again and stop bagging people for sticking to the rules and doing everything that is totally allowed.
It was actually pretty sickening to see when we were in Apollo, and I worked in Apollo Bay for quite a period of time, and coming along back through Lawn also, there was no shops open. Like, yeah, it's really disgusting. Tough. Like, Torquay is sort of close enough for everyone to get to, and that was packed Torquay when we drove through Torquay. And Apollo Bay is not even 2 hours from my joint, and so it's not too far, but it was actually sickening. Like, we went to try and get breakfast, and Kari's like, there's literally the one cafe open and everything's shut. And I don't know how long they're going to be shut for. I know there's a lot of windows with nothing in it, which is not good, but there's no tour buses that are traveling up and down at all. So, and that's what they rely on. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that we can support them with the fishing side of it, because being such a big fishing community here, Victoria and the country, the tuna run out of Apollo Bay and you can get onwards of 150 boats there on a Saturday, Sunday, and 20 or 30, 40 during the week that is stopping at the bakery, buying your food before you go out. You go on the IGA, buying your bottle of Jammo, then you go into your fuel station, fueling your big 200-litre tanks up and whatnot. So hopefully we can support, like you said before, Mallacoota and everywhere that's around the water, plus everything else, but that's what we can do to help do our bit, I think, Pat.
We've got a massive show of real adventures coming your way. Up next, we've got the Social Club, but we're going to touch on what is biting right around the country, and Red's going to talk through the snapper season. How far away is it? Gwayne Blake's going to join us today. He's going to talk through how to prepare for it. He thinks it's only a matter of days now as that water continues to warm up. All that and more this morning on Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Let's find out what has been biting right around the country, Redmond.
Yeah, it's been a lot happening, and I'm actually sitting here a little bit sad to repeat what I'm about to say here, which I said to you when I first joined you this morning, and we're meant to be in Tasmania right now.
We are.
And a good friend of the show, we've had him on before, Josh Hammersley.
And Josh, we are...
Get off social media because you're pissing me off.
We are incredibly disappointed with you at the moment because you're killing us, mate. You're killing us.
We're literally meant to be there, Patrick. We are literally meant to be fishing with Josh, and he has landed a big barrel of bluefin tuna in October out of Tasmania at an Eagle Hawk Neck.
These are monsters, Redmond.
Big fish, 109 kilo, I think Josh's one went the other day. We should be there.
We should.
Dan won't let us.
You could ride this thing.
I'm about to ride a fish there. That's what I'm saying.
You could, Santa Claus could strap his sled to this and he would be toting around the world. They are absolute monsters.
And I'm still going to stick to it. I know it's a Tassie report at the moment. I reckon there's some fish here that I could jump on the back and get to Tassie on the back of them. So, because they're making that way, they're themselves that way. So, well done to Josh and the crew. Beautiful fish during the week. Good sounder pictures. Josh Hamsley on social media. He does some awesome live. Like he goes live while he's out there. Service isn't a 10 out of 10, but we work with that when you've got barrel bluefin coming on the screen and you see the seals and the dolphins doing their thing. So good on you, Josh and the crew. Beautiful fish during the week. Heading back towards the inland, Pat, fishing in the kayak in the Camden Dam. Quality trout, arvo fishing much better.
Yep.
So you can
once that water warms up, that's the key for trout. So it's not about actually getting there and fishing at first light at 6 a.m. or 5:30. Wait for that water to warm up a little bit, and it's good for you because the bones will warm up a little bit as well.
I'm not arguing.
And then once you sort of hit anything sort of 10 a.m. onwards almost, it's fantastic. It's brilliant.
Also fishing the Huon, which something this will have you interested in for sure. Some big sea runners kept anglers busy with baits working really well. So if you are heading down there, make sure you do keep in mind to push up the river as well, because there's fish getting caught up the river. But if you're interested in doing that, the whole sea runner thing, which I know you would be, it's well and truly worth chasing those. WA Scarborough fishing really well for yellowfin at the moment. Small Vibes are doing their best work. Heading over to South Australia, Edithburgh went nuts for some whiting during the week with plenty of squid also to come in amongst the whiting if you set up a nice drift. And you and I seen during the week in a similar area a 68-centimetre King George whiting.
It's a monster.
It's not really a King George whiting because it's got its own postcode. But
we thought it was a kingfish.
It is massive. It's 68 centimetres. And I got one during the week that went 45. It makes me look stupid. So well,
you know when they say, oh, this whiting was massive. It was as thick as my forearm. Well, this was as thick as the bloke's quad.
It was quad.
It was huge.
It's there's some big fish, and a good friend of the show's, we like to talk about Paul Worsling, does a fantastic job. He headed down into Tassie and had a show on his iFish on Channel 10 and cracking big whiting, 60, but this was nearly 70. Like, yeah. It's even bigger than that. So they're big, big fish. Going into
the thing is, like, a fish that size, like, that's majority of time, South Australians will keep those. Like, sometimes they're like, oh, it's a little bit small, but we'll keep it.
We might keep a 68.
We'll keep a 68, but, you know, good for breeding that you throw it back. But, yeah, that sort of range in SA.
It'd be going straight on my wall if I caught a 68-centimetre whiting.
Yeah, throw those.
It'll replace my 32. some signs of snapper out of Coogee this week in New South Wales. Squid and mackerel doing their thing. Some rat kingfish have also turned up. We haven't seen them for a bit due to restrictions and whatnot in Sydney. They've played a fair big part of this. But out of Port Hacking and also Byron Bay.
And they're just using, it's just sort of metal slugs, isn't it?
Yeah, like just they're on the surface. So yep. Just casting metals into them. There isn't a lot of legals amongst them.
But they're good if you can, like, the biggest challenge clearly in Sydney at the moment is if you get to three miles offshore and you have to turn around. So if you want a good day out, if you can find them, they're a huge amount of fun for the kids.
They are, and also something that is probably not as much fun but a lot of fun when you're actually eating them is the flathead. The flathead fishing has been sensational on the bottom, and I'm actually due to go out there and do a big stock up because Finn crunches flathead. We bought some when we were in Apollo Bay from the co-op there, and they cooked it up in front, like, they fresh, so you actually don't have to have the frozen fish. They cook it straight off the boats. And I hadn't had flathead in a while, and geez, he crunched his body. It's an amazing fish. But also, this is probably the story of the week, is those yellowfin again, out of that sort of southeast of New South Wales, more that sort of Naruma, down to the kink off Burmese even, big yellowfin. So 30 to 80 kilo again. And a lot of, these days, those yellowfin, a lot of people chasing them with stick baits rather than setting your lure spreads out.
Yep.
They're using the lure spread to be able to locate them. And then once they sort of locate them, they're changing to stick baits. But there's also a big school of bluefin out there, but they're small. They're those 8 kilo things that we were speaking about a couple of weeks ago. And a lot of people chasing those were actually losing big yellowfin because the techniques obviously still work for the yellowfin. Yep. So there's a lot of fish there, and I'm fingers crossed the borders can open soon. I can get amongst these yellowfin because we haven't seen a year quite like it for a long, long time. So yellowfin fishing really, yellowfin tuna fishing really, really well. And just the last one for Queensland, those yellowfin out of Manly this week on the poppers, small poppers. They're just sensational fish to catch on there. They pull hard, they're nice and shallow, but They reckon they taste better than King George Whiting. I've eaten it. Oh, it's on par. So it's a good eating fish. And that's what's been biting around the country this week, Pat.
Your week in fishing, Redmond?
Yeah, a little bit quieter this week because I did take the family away to Apollo Bay, but managed to get out at the end of the week. Managed to get offshore in that nice northerly wind. We got some gummies. Yeah, really nice gummies.
Really nice size gummies.
Yeah, so nothing big. It's funny, I'm fishing marks where I get a lot of big gummies, like real big ones, and I'm just not getting them, but we're getting numbers of... And when I say they're not bad fish, they're still up towards that 12 to 14 kilo, beautiful eating fish, but they're not those big 30s that we can get. So I don't know what's going on there, but it doesn't worry me. As long as that rod's bending over, it's fine. There's been a few snapper caught at Barwon Heads, which is also good to see. Port Phillip Bay is starting to get warmer. Still wouldn't call it snapper season. I'm not doing that until November sort of thing, but they're starting to get caught. I managed to get a couple off Clifton Springs at the end of the week as well, which was good.
But still tough fishing, aren't they?
It's not easy. And this is what I had in my Salt Guide report during the week. Snapper sends people mad. And don't get me wrong, it's our best time for my business, blah, blah, blah. But I'll be honest, always honest. If you want to go out and catch a snapper, go for it. Now's the perfect time to do it. But the problem is you might get one, you might get none, you might get two. You might get lucky and get 15. But
it's hard.
It's hard. It's not going to be one of those, like, in a month's time, I could pretty much go out every day for the next month and a half, 2 months, and pretty much guarantee you fish every single session. Where in sort of this time of the year, I might go out and not catch anything for a period of time. You might sit there for 4 hours for one fish, which I don't like to fish them like that. So it's not quite snapper season, but it's well worth having a look. Big squid, they're starting to show up too. Water's a bit dirty, but we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Beautiful work, Redmond. Let's get to the social club. We take your questions from social media each and every week. It's very, very simple. Simply send us a direct message on Facebook, on our Instagram, or link us into our Twitter and we'll get in contact with you. And if you send through your questions and we ask them on the show, every week we're announcing a Real Brand winner of a hat and a fishing top as well. So we'll send those out to you. The first question though, Redmond. Hey guys, how are you? I know you've talked about this before, but I can't find the podcast episode. What is the best fishing net on the market? I've just purchased a new boat, so it's all new to me. Cheers, Michael.
First of all, if you do want to listen to any of our shows, Pat, we'll throw it in there. The Real Adventures app is available, or you can head to iTunes on any of your smart devices and you will find Real Adventures there with Pat and I talking a lot of rubbish. But
it's important to note that when it comes to nets, one size doesn't really fit all, does it?
It doesn't.
We've spoken on the show often about the importance of having a bait net, particularly for those, well, only really for those that use live bait and have a live bait tank set up. But there's two others clearly that are really important to a day's fishing in Redmond.
Yeah, an Enviro net is obviously environmentally friendly, but it's also doesn't work for certain species of fish as well. So now you've got the net that you spoke about. You've got a little live bait net, which I like to call an aquarium net, so you net goldfish and whatnot with. And that's what I like to use in my live bait tank to get my slimy mackerel out, my yakkers and so on. Then I've got a squid net. I don't net squid, but I'm just options you can have is you just get a normal squid net, but it needs to have quite big holes in it so it can run through the water.
Yep.
You don't want that Enviro net that I'm about to talk about because you can't pull them through the water.
Well, so if you can, you're lifting that water a little bit too close to the boat.
Oh, it's
and when they shoot,
you're getting smashed. It's those Enviro nets. They're about $70 up to $120, depending on the sizes you get. But they are really good for snapper. So snapper, when they come up, don't get me wrong, they pull hard to the surface, but they tend to lie down. You can just pop your Enviro net underneath them. Then they look after the fish. They're soft on the fish and you don't hurt the fish, especially if you're going to release them. But another good net that is probably your all-rounder as such, and Hook'em do a great range of nets. So if you head to the Hook'em website and you'll be able to choose exactly what you want. Now, I run the extra large deep net and they call them hook friendly, where they don't get caught in your hooks as easy in the actual netting side of things.
Well, the net, I'd argue that. The net isn't like a... It's not fibrous.
No, so it's like a different type of material.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
But the problem with them is they are big and deep. So if you do net a squid in one of those, you're reaching 4 meters to try and get the squid out of it, which doesn't really work to your advantage. But then you've also got your big gumbo. So those 20 kilo gummies, they work really, really well for them. I use it on my snapper too. I use that to net all my snapper because I don't want too many nets on the boat because I'm only in a 6 meter boat. It's not the biggest boat. So there's this sort of range of nets that I would tend to look at to go with the fishing that you do.
I think the other thing that's important, if you do intend on getting a net and you don't want to spend a huge amount of money, so you go for a bit of an old cheapo version, when you're actually lifting the fish or the gummy shark or whatever it is, if it's of any decent size, you can't actually, you can't, you know, put the arm of the net on the boat and then hoist it over. You've actually got to lift it.
Yep. Grab the actual...
In a vertical action, because otherwise you're just going to bend the bar or you'll bend the actual...
especially those big gummies, like those 20, 30 kilo gummies, you're just going to wreck what you have, so...
Beautiful work, Michael. The next one's from Carlo. Hi, guys. Love your show. Can you recommend a good quality filleting knife? My long blade fillet knife, I find it too flexy on bigger fish. Is there a better solution or should I persist? Thanks, Carlo from Aspendale. Great. Good on you, Carlo. I like the questions. Very good this morning.
It's knives. So these are a must to have on the boat. And you and I have reviewed these and tipped them and done everything over the last handful of years. And
we've often talked about the fact that your bait knife is not the knife that you should be using to fillet the fish if you want to make the most of the flesh that's on the fish frame.
Exactly.
And if you want to remove the bones that are in the fish, it can get a bit difficult with your blunt, old, useless bait knife that's fine for chipping in a pilchards, but when you're working through barracuda or you're working around flathead tails, they're not going to cut the mustard.
No, and another thing I'm going to mention, your bait knife still should be sharp. Not it's the one, it's not the one you clean your fish with, like you said, but it's not the one, you need to have it sharp because just for instance, during the week, trying to cut those through some salmon chunks, actually have made him, I snapped a knife in half, but he, because it wasn't sharp. You need to get it sharp so you can smoothly get through the fish in itself, because if you start pushing and prodding, you're going to cut yourself and the blunt knife will go through your finger quite easily because you're pushing so hard. Where a sharp knife, you just tend to let the knife do the work rather than pushing. Anyway,
yeah.
F-Dick. And I'm not talking about any swear words here either, Patrick. They're a brand of knife.
No profanities?
They just work really, really well. Hold their edge really well. They're a quality knife. Now, Craigo, who is a partner of Soul God with myself, ex-butcher. Now, he... recommend that butchers use these knives. He highly recommends them. Now, for a set of F-Dick, you can pick up for about $169. And it goes back to his question regarding, I guess, taking bones out and everything, like all sorts of different. You need different knives for different things. Now, a barrel bluefin tuna, I use just your normal 6 or 7 inch F-Dick knife. It's a small knife. I'm not using a machete to fillet a whole barrel bluefin. It's literally just taking the cut. There's different techniques for every fish. But where if you get a gummy shark and you need to skin it, you actually need quite a long knife. So it's different. So what I'd do is I'd head in and get a variety of different knives. One that isn't flexy, one that's flexy, because you want a bony knife where you can get in and get those whiting rib cage out nice and easy. But you also want to have a bit of firmness in it, because if you're doing a snapper, you want to be able to flick, get those bones out as well. So F-Dick do a great range. Jump online. I've just done it in front of me right now. $115 to $169, depending on which styles of knives you go, as well as if you opt out for a sharpener. And a sharpener is always a good thing to invest in, because there's nothing worse than having a blunt knife when you're trying to clean fish. Last question is for you, Patrick. Danger, where is the boat at? You seem to have gone quiet on it. Cheers, Peter.
Good on you, Pete. Well, I haven't gone quiet. I posted during the week.
You're very active during the week.
It's gone, it's at Formosa, former sign now.
Yep.
So the boys there are putting in U-Deck. And we've often talked about U-Deck on our show before. It makes fishing... it's so much easier on your body because of the cushioning that it gives on your floor versus a glass floor, a carpeted floor.
And it looks
checker plate floor. And it looks great. So we've gone for a bit of a teak look because the boat is...
You've gone teak, have you? Yeah. You haven't,
yeah, I want a game.
Andrew rang me during the week from Melbourne and he goes to me, where are you? Because I sort of helped with Pat's design of the boat. And he goes, oh, just by chance. He goes, I'm just at the Bimini's and I'm just going to... Might drop the boat off the formal sign. Do you know if he wanted a floor? I said, I don't care if he doesn't want a floor. I said, put it in. If he cracks it, I said, I'll pay for it. I said, because he's not having the boat without a floor. And he goes, oh, I better ring him. I said, you can ring him. If you can't get a hold of it, drop it off anyway, because I'm making him get a floor. But I wouldn't have chosen teak.
Why not?
It sort of looks a bit like what you are, a bit of the old factor. You're not in that 60 million super yacht that we're going to talk about later.
Ooh, that is coming up on the gaff. Look out, Channel 9, Queensland.
It will look good to take.
Yeah, teak look. Wanted something to balance because the whole thing's silver. If we went at silver, silver external finishes, silver internal finishes, and then the floor.
Could have called the boat silver.
It would have been a little bit ridiculous, I reckon. So next week, the boat will be very, very close to water testing. So hopefully
it's just four week. Models out now. Sorry, Andrew. Sorry, Rob. but true.
All right, that wraps up the social club. Make sure you're joining the conversation. Just send us a direct message, any sort of question you like on our socials, and we'd love to get in touch with you, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. What on, Carlo? You are our winner this week for our Real Brand gear. So send us a direct message with your details and we'll shoot it out to you. Bear in mind that at the moment, Australia Post apparently is 8 months behind when it comes to sending.
8 months?
Well, that's a I'm putting a bit of mail on it, but there's a fair bit happening at the moment. Anyway,
I saw something during the week. How would they say they haven't got enough staff? There's that many people without jobs in COVID right now. Put some people on. Seriously.
There's plenty more Real Adventures coming up after the break. Gwayne Blake joins us to talk through the upcoming snapper season.
Gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic.
Time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Now, he's one of our regular guests, Gwayne Blake, professional fishing guide. He's also one of your partners in Salt Guide. They'll teach you how to attack each species that's relevant at the time. Clearly, at the moment, there's been great whiting being caught. There's been plenty of calamari. But, Gwayne, what we're keen to talk about today is the upcoming snapper season that doesn't seem too far away and what anglers need to do in order to get ready for these fish.
Yeah, g'day, guys. So, basically, the snapper season's already started in Western Port, but guys that are following me would have seen I've already caught a 20-pounder. Which I was very lucky with, I suppose.
Geez, he didn't take long to put that in, Aaron. He did not take long to drop that.
So basically, this time of year, the fish are coming in because they know that the water temperature is going to warm up because that daylight's growing. So we've gone past the equinox already, which is probably the thing that I start looking for snapper fishing, and that's when you've got equal sunlight and darkness, and we've gone past that now, so our daylight's getting longer and longer each day. And that's the trigger point, I believe, to start looking for snapper in Western Port. So that's happened, and now we're sort of just targeting them up the top of the bays. So basically, you can get them in the top of Port Phillip as well, but basically we're looking for all the little tributaries in the top ends of Western Port, and the sun sort of heats up the banks. So we get these big spring tides and all the banks come out of the water in Western Port. And if you've ever fished Western Port for the first time, it can be quite frightening because you'll go out at high tide and then you come in at low tide and the whole place is totally changed because the banks will come a metre and a half out of water. So they'll heat up in this sun, and then the next tide that comes in, that evening run-in tide, the actual mud will heat up that water. So last week, we had that 3-day spell of some really nice calm weather. The actual water temperature hit 17.4. And then we'll get a blow come through, like we just had the southwest blow come through, and that just churns everything up. And it's actually dropped back down to 13.7. But in the next coming days, it'll heat up again. While this keeps happening and we get the big spring tide that pulls all that warm water back down the port, it'll actually heat up the port right throughout, and we'll get an early season compared to Port Phillip. So we'll be in full swing by the end of October. There'll be snapper getting caught everywhere in Western Port, and then Port Phillip sort of follows 2 weeks behind that.
Your Salt Guide report, you were talking about the fact that you were using a calamari ring hung off a 6-0 inline straight octopus circle hook. Talk us through the gear that you're using to target these fish. Is there anything more than just that?
Yeah, so I actually fish quite light. I don't like a heavy rod, so I'm using a 10 to 25 pound atomic arrow. It's got a very light tip and only 35 pound braid. And the idea is these early season fish can be quite tensitive on the bite. So big between a flathead and a rock cod bite, and then the next thing you know, the rod just peels over. And that lighter tip lets the fish sit there and chew the bait before it, you know, commits to it and runs off, whereas a heavier rod, like the old plank ugly sticks that we used to use back in the day, which were great rods at the time because we used to use mono, mono had the stretch in it. Now it's all back to braid. You want that give in the rod so the fish doesn't feel that rod. And we also use those flat rod racks that we all seem to use in Victoria, but you go anywhere else and everyone goes back to vertical. If you ever grab a rod and try and hold it up and then hold it up like sort of a 90-degree angle and get your mate to pull the drag on it, you watch how much that rod bends before it starts taking drag, and you can feel the weight on that rod. But if you lay it flat and then get your mate to pull the drag, the rod hardly moves and you don't feel any weight on it. So that's what we're trying to do on the water, is make it as subtle as possible for these early season fish.
Gwayne, a lot of people tend to be scared of tide. Now, Western Port, you spoke a little bit about tide a couple of seconds ago, about whole new day when you come back to the ramp from high to low tide. Take us through the techniques to actually understand the tide for when you're targeting, say, snapper, because tide is probably the most important thing when it comes to fishing.
Yeah, so when we're fishing in these top end areas, basically the fish graze up and down the banks or in the middle of the channel, and they use the tide just to push them back and forth. So you'll find an area in those channels where there's a nice bit of rubble reef, and you know that they like feeding on the rubble reef. It's also good because even during the middle of the day, we get sea lice. And if you drop a camera down in 7 metres of water up in the top end, it's totally black. They can't see a thing down there. So sitting on top of these rubble reefs, you'll find that you'll get less sea lice, means your bait's in the water longer. And you just want to make sure your bait's streamlined, it doesn't spin. We just anchor up on these areas and let the fish sort of come to us. As the season progresses and warms up, the fish come out of these tributaries and they'll sit on the banks of like Long Reef up at Lysarts or down off Observation Point on these bigger reefs, and the fish will actually hold there, and that's when we sound them up and anchor on them and wait for them to start feeding. But the thing about tide is once you find, and you've experienced this with me, Red, is once we find a patch of fish, they'll bite a whole tide. Whereas in Port Phillip, it's very like top of the bay and stuff. It can all be around tide changes. We just get this hot bite and then nothing happens for the rest of the day. We can have in 5 metres of water and an evening run in tide later in the year, we could get, you know, 35, 40 snapper in 5 metres of water. So they're perfect to release. And this goes back to why we use circle hooks, is corner of the jaw hook up and, you know, catch your feed and release what you don't need.
Now, Port Phillip, there's a lot of different ways to present your baits, but traditionally we'll talk about snelled rigs for your silver whiting, snelled rigs for your pillies, single hook for your squid rings and whatnot. You can't just anchor up in Western Port and throw a snelled pilchard out. It's just not going to work. It's going to spin. It's going to cause... There's different ways to rig it, but let's keep it simple. What are your go-to baits for Western Port for the next month?
Just fresh bait. So chunk baits, either a yakka or what they call scat if you're buying bait, salmon chunks and squid rings. That's the three that I use. Anything else, you know, you might catch as a bycatch. Even whiting heads can be very good, leftover whiting heads. But, yeah, your go-to, probably yakka and squid are my favourite baits.
Beautiful work, Wayne Blake, Australian Professional Fishing Guide, saltguide.com.au for more information and to get in contact with Gwayne and the services that he offers. Gwayne, thanks for joining us this morning on Real Adventures.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic, mobile living made easy. It's time for Red's review, and I've got the review this week, and it's pretty simple. I've spent the last couple of weeks Redmond camping.
Yep.
And I've got two brilliant Dometic outdoor chairs. One's the Dometic Lounge Forenza, I think it's pronounced. And the other one is their new Governor Armchair. And the whole time it was stolen.
Governor Armchair?
Yeah, it's a cracker. And you do feel like the governor sitting in this thing. The whole time it was stolen by other people. We had some family up there as well staying at the campsite. And they would steal it because we were opposite. We were literally next to each other on the campsite. And they would steal these chairs during the night and take them for themselves because they had the $6 special that they'd bought from the middle aisle at Aldi. And half the ass was missing out of it, and they'd stolen mine. And the reason why I really like the lounge, I'll call it the Friends, is because it reclines. And it's, I think it's one thing that we all love to do whilst we're out camping, really anywhere, but you're sitting in front of a fire at night and you like to rock back on the back two legs of your chair. Everyone does it. Now, in a $6 Kmart special, a lot of the time, this mightn't surprise you, these won't necessarily agree with the rocking back motion, but the seven backrest positions on the Firenze, and it was extremely well received.
The only thing that I've got out of this review is that you get looked after a hell of a lot better from Dometic than I do, because I don't have no rocking chair.
This was a review, Aaron. I had to test it out.
Yeah,
I had to test it.
I camped in Apollo Bay too, Dometic.
This is not about, pushing a product that hasn't been tried and tested by my ass. This has been.
It's a pretty big backside too.
For 2 weeks, and it survived me kids as well. So if you want more information on the governor or on the...
Oh, the governor. Just picturing you sitting in there too with your little...
or on the
finish this segment, please. I've got to get out of here.
Or on the Dometic Lounge for Rents. Head to Dometic.com for more info, and you can purchase from their website as well. That is Red's Review.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
The flying gaff this week, Aaron, it's heading to Channel 9 Queensland.
Gold Coast.
Because you said to me during the week, I've got a story. Because we like to, on Real Adventures, we love to, have a bit of fishing news and what's happening around the country and, new four-wheel drives that are hitting the market, new Stabby crafts. New Mercury engines, all those sorts of things. And you're like, the biggest super yacht in the world has arrived in the Gold Coast. And you said, $60 million. $60 million.
Just pocket change, really.
So
Channel 9. Are you recording right now?
I am recording.
That's good.
Channel 9 have spent 3 minutes of their news bulletin talking about how incredible this is for Australian waters. I think we just need to reset ourselves, Channel 9 Gold Coast. Because the gaff this week is heading squarely and fairly in your direction. Because if you had any sort of comprehension of the global super yacht market, you'd understand that 60 million and 68 meters in length is basically a tender in Europe.
How big do they get in Europe?
Mate, we're talking 160 meters.
Right.
We're talking $600 million. I just couldn't believe it. No wonder... At different stages, we are a bit of a laughing stock in Australia because we're getting excited about a $60 million,
but
68-meter super yacht.
It has a helicopter on the top.
They wouldn't actually let that boat in the waters of Italy. You're not allowed in. They'd be like, nah, sorry, mate. You can't come in here. Now, but we're a super yacht. Well, you're not really.
You're a pretend super yacht.
You're a tender. Yet in Australia, it is breaking news on Channel 9. So our good friends at Channel 9 Gold Coast, some phenomenal fishing there at the moment, they have the flying gaff this week, Redmond. So I think it's a deserved gaff.
You're listening to Real Adventures. We'll see you next week.